Today we're going to take it from the top and start at the beginning of Parshas Mitzora. It's very interesting to note that this Parsha earlier on was called Zot Tihiyah, because that's the first words of the Parsha. God speaks to Moshe and he says, Zot Tihiyah, this is what should be. Rashi calls it Parshas Zot Tihiyah, Rambam calls it Parshas Zot Tihiyah, and we call it today Parshas Mitzora. And it's a long explanation from the Rebbe as to how that reflects in our times and the fact that we're coming close to Mashiach. I'm not going to dwell on that right now. Anyway, in today's day and age, it is called Parshas Mitzora. And it begins with the words, Zot Tihiyah Torat HaMitzora. This will be the Torah, which means the instruction, or the laws that will govern the procedure of the Mitzora B'yom Taharato, on the day that he comes forward to attain purity. So this is going to be the laws of that process. Vehuva el hakohen. He's brought to the kohen. So let's take it from the top. The first thing that we could note is that in the previous parsha, Parshas Tazria, we discussed the mitzora, and we also, meaning the dermal lesions, the person himself, and we also discussed the possibility of tzarat on clothing. Wardrobe malfunctions. The Torah then speaks about how you deal with the offensive wardrobe. And here, the Torah speaks about the purification process of the Mitzora, the person who's stricken with these lesions himself. The interesting thing is that it isn't until the fourth reading of this Parsha that we address the concept of Tzorat Batim, of the problem that could develop on the walls of the home. So the obvious question is, why is it that we make the distinction between the tzarat of the person and tzarat of the clothing? Interrupted like with the clothing. Instead of talking about the person being healed, we went on to talk about the clothing and how you deal with that clothing. And then only afterwards do we talk about the concept of tzarat batim. Seemingly, the logical thing is dermal lesions. Here's the problem. Here's the diagnosis. Here's the solution. Then we should have gone on in order. Here's the problem with the wardrobe when it malfunctions. Here's what you should deal and here's how to take care of it. And then we should have a third volley. Here's what happens if the tzaras affects the walls of your home. It doesn't work like that. It doesn't follow that order. We get person, interruption of clothing, again more about person, and only afterwards do we talk about tzaras batim. So the Tzord Hamor says something very interesting. He says this is revealing about clothing in general. He says clothing are supposed to be the honor of a person. The Gemara says, "Biyechanan karele lemane mechabdusa." He would call his wardrobe, he would call it his honor. And the notion that clothes are supposed to frame a person, it's supposed to bring out the best in a person. So a person wears fine clothes, nice clothes, it frames the person. Whether slim or not, you know, there's a different cut of the clothing, there's a different style of the clothing, different color of the clothing. It works best for a person. And that's the honor of a person. So he said, after we talk about the concept of the person and the dermal lesions, we want to connect this to clothing immediately before we go on to the house. The house doesn't frame you. You live in a house, but it's what's called in the language of Hasidus, makif harochik. It's like it surrounds you from a distance. It's not measured to fit. It doesn't actually fit you. And this really and truly addresses, to some degree, the concept of the importance of clothing. Clothing is a divine idea. Adam and Chava ate from the sin, from the tree of knowledge, ate the forbidden fruit, and they suddenly knew they were naked. Who created the first wardrobe? God did. Getting dressed is Hashem's idea. Modesty is a divine concept. Modest clothing comes from Hashem, no less. So the notion that we live in a society where, as long as the weather permits it, people will reveal as much as they could or wear as little as possible is actually contrary to the Torah. The Torah expects us to dress modestly, and the clothes bring us honor and dignity, not chas v'shalom, the opposite of indignity. And that's how the Torah conveys it to us by emphasizing now, when it comes to the issues that can go wrong, we hear about the person, the dermal lesions, we hear about the clothing, and later on we'll talk about the home. So that's just a very, I think, very important and beautiful lesson, something that maybe has to be mentioned. Mitzora. This is really one of the first times you show up with the term Mitzora. And here it's a whole parsha called Mitzora. So the Gemara in Erchin on page 15 says that Mitzora is a conjunction of the words Motzi Shemra. Motzi Shemra means somebody who slanders. A person who slanders somebody else. Very popular thing in today's day and age, unfortunately. People destroy others' reputations with social media. A casual tweet can literally destroy somebody's life. And the interesting thing is that the tweet or Twitter has the imagery of a bird, and tweeting of a bird. And we're going to hear about the purification process of the Mitzora that two birds are used. Because the birds tweet all day. Now, birds, of course, don't tweet anything offensive. I don't know what they're saying, but they're not hurting anybody. But when people behave like birds by tweeting, but they do it with the human potential gone awry, then this is a sad and unfortunate thing. So the Mitzora is the Motzi Shemra, is a person who's guilty of gossip and slandering. The Parsha begins with the word Zot Tihiyeh, and as I mentioned to you, many of the Rishonim, including Rashi in last week's Parsha and the Rambam in Mishnah Torah, called this Parsha Parshat Zot Tihiyeh. So the Shem Olam says, Zot Tihiyeh can mean one of two things. It can either be a conclusion of a paragraph or a sentence, or even a portion. You can read about something and say, Zot Tihiyeh, and this is exactly what it should be. Or it can be the inaugural verses, heralding. This is what's going to be required. And then it refers to the things that will follow. So the Shem Olam says, understand that Parshat Zot Tihiyeh is not a continuation of what we said before we talked about problems, issues, challenges. This week's Torah portion is about solutions. So the Zot Tihiyeh is forward-focused, not culminative, not concluding what we started previously, but rather heralding a new reality. Here's how the Mitzora is able to escape from his imperfect situation. Now it says that this will be the Torah, which means the teaching is the laws that will govern the procedure of the Mitzora, biyom taharato. So what does this mean, biyom taharato? So we have this idea that it has to be done during the day. It cannot be done at night. And we see this in Rashi, where Rashi transcribes the words Zot Tihiyeh Torah, so this will be the Torah, that Rashi adds the word Vegomer, etc. And from here, we can understand that this is not only speaking about the word Zot Tihiyeh, which actually don't require any elucidation. Zot Tihiyeh, this should be. What's it talking about? Shem Olam says, it's talking about everything on the go forward. And then it says right away, Biyom Taharoso. So Zot Tihiyeh means that all of the things we're going to talk about, says Rashi, Melamed, this teaches us, Shein Mitar Enoise Belaila, that none of this procedure can be done at night. This is a day thing. It all has to be done during the day. Now, many emphasize, including the Malbim, that this is Biyom Tihiyeh, means on the day of. Do not delay the process. If it's possible to attain purity, then the Torah should seek at the Kohen as soon as possible and say, please, I think I'm ready. And the Kohen will come and say, nah, sorry, mister, you're not ready. Okay, fine, try again tomorrow. And then I'll try again tomorrow. But on the day when he could, he should. Because to get out of the Mitzora situation is something that we should be keen on. It's not a good place to be. And here comes very surprising words. The Torah finishes this first inaugural pasuk, introducing the laws that govern the procedure, by saying, V'huva el ha-kohen. He's brought to the Kohen. But the Torah doesn't say who brings him. And the stranger thing is that if you look at verse 3, it says, V'yotza ha-kohen el mechutz la-machane. So V'huva sounds like he's moving towards the Kohen, but verse 3 says, no, there's no moving parts here. There's just a moving part. The Kohen is in motion. The Kohen, V'yotza ha-Kohen al mechutz l'machana. The Kohen comes into the area outside of the camp. V'ro ha-Kohen, the Kohen sees, V'hine nirpa ha-nega, indeed, the lesion has healed, the nega tzaras min ha-tzaruah, from the person who is stricken with this paranormal malady. So who goes where? And then, besides who goes where, who brings the Kohen? V'huva. Who? So this is really interesting. Because it's clear that the person needs the Kohen. That's clear. You got to find the Kohen. We get that. But he remains outside the camp. So if he remains outside the camp, it should be the Kohen that's coming to him. Maybe you should say, V'kara el ha-Kohen, he calls the Kohen. What's the Vehuva? How is he meeting the Kohen? So the Ramban in the Sefer Kurazov emphasizes that the Kohen has got to make it his business, or the Metzora has to make it his business, but it still doesn't explain to us why he has to, so to speak, go out. The Chizkuni, the Sefarno, the Rabbi Yosef Bchar Shor, they all suggest kind of that once the Kohen is on his way out to the person, then the person has to move towards the Kohen. The problem with that is it says V'huvel HaKohen before it says V'yotza HaKohen. And the Rebbe says another problem with this is that we don't have this notion anywhere that the Metzora was very far away. It says outside the city gates. Okay, outside the city gates. There wasn't much wiggle room. He was right outside. That means if the Kohen would come outside, he would encounter the Metzora. It's not as if he was in a distant place and they would both have to be moving and encounter each other at some point. So that doesn't answer the question of V'huvel. The Panech Raza says that the Vehuva means even if he's physically ill and he can't transport himself, get transported. The problem is that why are we using a slender percentage to become the main expression of Torah? Vehuva. Vehuva sounds like he always has to be brought. And you're telling me it's for the one guy who's in a wheelchair. Okay, if somebody is immobile, obviously it would have to be brought. And then again, the Kohen's coming out to him. So if the Kohen's coming out to him, why would he have to go towards the Kohen? And why do we bring that way, V'huva the Kohen? The Daz Zakenu Balei HaTosfos says, V'huva is in Notrikan, an acronym for V'huba. V'huba, and he comes. Which says, besides that the Kohen's going to come out to get him, he's got to go out to find the Kohen. He's got to go. Okay, well, here's the problem. It should say Uva el HaKohen. Vehuva, even though the Baal HaTosfos want to say it means Vehuva and he comes, Vehuva doesn't mean and he comes. Vehuva, without breaking the word into multiple words, means he's brought. He's brought, but doesn't say who brings him. We know he's outside the camp, but who brings him? This is the question. Okay, so now we're going to go over to the Birei HaChumash. And the Rebbe will give us an explanation, not in Pshutei Shel Mikra, because it really isn't an explanation in Pshutei. But this explanation is through the prism of Hasidic teaching, that there's a very deep and profound idea being conveyed. Page Reish Gimel on the bottom. This is Simon Hay, the fifth entry in Parshas Metzora. So the Rebbe says, the question we're about to deal with is an old question. Tomu ha-Mefarshim, the commentaries on Chumash, many of them expressed astonishment at this verse and tried to wrap their heads around it. What does it mean, V'huva? We have, for example, as I mentioned, the Sefarno, the Chizkuni, and they try to say that means that a person should come a little bit closer to minimize the Kohen's journey. The Kohen shouldn't have to go so far. But like I said, the problem, of course, is that we don't find any way that the Kohen had to be tzugezunt very far to begin with. The Metzora didn't have to be far. It had to be outside, but not far.
Doesn't Huva imply that somebody's bringing the
yes.
Metzora to?
Yes, Nathan. And that's the issue here. But Huva does imply...
It's not the Metzora itself, himself.
Correct. Correct. So Balei HaTosfos say, Huva is an acronym for and a tikkun from Huva, and he comes. But that's not what it means. Literally speaking, Huva means he's brought. There's something that compels him. There's something that moves him. And this is the question. What moves the Metzora? It doesn't say he moves himself. It says he's moved. There's something that compels him to come. What is that? This is the question we're asking. So the Mefarshim ask, Ma Peshet HaMilim, what is the meaning of these words, V'huva L'Kayin? V'harei Lo'i HaMetzora Hu Shabo L'Kayin. It's not the Metzora that's coming to the Kayin. And we know that Sha'arei Asur Le'Lekonis Alamachana. The Metzora is not allowed to go into the city. It's the Kohen who's got to go out of the city to go see the Metzora. So if he can't go to the Kohen, and the Kohen has to come to him, why bother emphasizing that he has to go to the Kohen? Besides the fact, what does it mean? it's just not the case. It's the Kohen who goes out, as it says in the very next verse. V'yotza ha-Kohen al mechutz al-machna. That's the job of the Kohen. If he's really a Kohen, he's got to go out there. And they have to encounter each other. And doesn't say Uba, even if we're to say that there's this mitzvah where he has to encounter. The Metzora's got to go out of his orbit, the Kohen goes out of his orbit, and they encounter each other. They meet each other. You know, the Alexander Rebbe said a very interesting thing. He said that the Metzora and the Kohen are polar opposites. The Metzora went around slandering somebody with the truth. Lashon Hara is not necessarily a lie. He told the truth, but it wasn't the truth that should be said. People did things maybe that were inappropriate. Did you have to spread the rumor? Did you have to be the one to disseminate the information? So when you do that, you're acting Lashon Hara. So this is using the truth in a negative way. Aaron HaKohen was the peacemaker. How did he make peace amongst people? By coloring the truth. By telling little white lies. Maybe kind of. He'd meet a fellow who was in a fight with somebody else and say, you know, I happened to bump into this person. They feel so bad about what happened. They really just want to make up and apologize, which wasn't really true. I mean, maybe on some deep neshama level it was true, but like overtly, it didn't really happen that way. And then you meet the other person and say, you know, I met that person you were having that dispute with. They feel terrible about it. They just want to make up. And then these two people would meet each other, each one under the premise that the other one had gotten off their pedestal. Nobody wants to get off his high horse. So Aaron actually used what seems to be dishonesty or deceit or a colored truth, less than the truth, to bring people together, whereas the Metzora used the truth to break people apart. And it's the polar opposite. So the Metzora, he's got to get out of his realm and stop claiming to be such a person of honesty and instead understand that bringing people together is what it's about, not chas v'shalom being divisive and breaking them apart. So, but still doesn't really explain the vahuva. The vahuva indicates not only that he has to come. You know, the Alexander Rebbe would be right if it said uba, but it doesn't say uba. It says vahuva. There's some kind of force, extraneous force that's compelling him, or some unnamed actor here, whose job is to bring the mitzvah. Who is this person? It'd be good to know, because if he has a mitzvah to do, is it a relative? Is it a teacher? If they have a mitzvah, then that's why we have to specify that. So the Rebbe did not seem to believe there was an answer in Pshuta Shel Mikra. There really is no satisfying answer, but there are some parts of Torah that can only be understood through the prism of mystical teaching. And the Rebbe says, Al Derech Achsidus, this is the explanation. The Metzora is a semel, the Metzora is a symbol of a person who sinned in a grievous way. He sinned so badly that he actually gets expelled from the camp. That's pretty bad.
He's had probably numerous warnings up to that point.
He's had numerous warnings. He should have known better. But when he didn't get it, he lost his house, his Chesterfield, and his wardrobe. He still didn't get the hint. Now he's expelled. To excommunicate somebody by dint of God's hand, so to speak, to boot somebody out of the community, that's serious. So the Metzora is clearly not a very savory fellow.
Although my recollection of Miriam was excommunicated also, but she didn't have to go through that process very fast, right?
Correct. With Miriam, it was very fast. You know, the very great people fall quickly and rise quickly. Mm-hmm. Miriam was a quick process. And the lesson for us is, Hashem made an example of Miriam to show us how even a person like Miriam was one of the greatest Jews ever to walk the face of the earth. And it was her little brother. She diapered him. She cared for him. She saved his life. And she didn't mean to slander him. She just made an assumption. There's people who break the word assume into three words. I'll leave it to your imagination. I won't verbalize the first part, but it means you out of you and me. That's what an assume is. So she made an assumption. And she verbalized that assumption. And she was punished. How much more so? We shouldn't make well-meaning assumptions and say things and so on and so forth. If you're in doubt whether it has to be said, just don't say it. Not everything must be said. So this is the Metzora fellow. And the Metzora is distance, pushed out of the tchum, out of the scrimmage of Kedusha. So this is the lesson. This is the message. Zos tia teres ametzera. This will be the teaching, the laws that govern the procedure of the metzora's rehabilitation. Vehuva, it's the first thing. Vehuva, he'll be brought. Which means, kol choyte, every sinner, yiyu chatov chamurim kasha yiyu, grievous as his or her sins may be. Soifoy lachser b'tshuva. Every yid will do tshuva. Every yid will come home. Every yid will be loshav al machna akdusha, will return to the scrimmage of holiness, to the orbit of sanctity. He'll come back to the kohen. And what happens if a person doesn't on their own? So then, vim lo yasezeis mirtzeinei, hu ye'oleitz lachem bal karchei. Then there'll be something that compels him. Something will force him. Kedivri anovi, like the words of the prophet Ezekiel, who said, v'ha'ayla aruchachem, hoyu leisiya, and that which you, in your own minds, come up with these ideas. You're doing your own thing. And you're doing your own thing, and you're not going to listen. You're not going to submit yourself to Hashem. Asher ata meimrim, that you say, nihye kigoyim. We want Israel to be a nation amongst the nations. We want to be just like everybody else. We don't want to be Jewish. We don't want to be special. We don't want to be chosen, separate, and apart. We just want to be a part of civilization. We want to be like everybody else. Chai ani ne'um Hashem Elikim. God says, I swear to you, that's not going to work. Im loy biyad chazaka em lechaleim. And if you won't come on your own, I'll coerce you. I'll compel you. So the Navi says that Hashem tells us he will never let us get lost. It's like when you see somebody else's child doing something wrong, you might care, you might try to help them. If they want to be helped, you'll help them. But if they refuse to be helped and you can't get anywhere, you did your part. But when it comes to your own child, you're not letting that kid get away with it. You're going to do whatever it takes. You're going to bring that kid home. And if they don't want to come home, that'll make you work even harder to bring them home. Why? Because failure is not an option. You're not just walking on. You're not moving on and forgetting about this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says we're his children. So if we're children, why don't we get treated nicer? Well, the point of children is we're still here. He doesn't let go of us. And even when we turn our backs to Hashem, Chas V'Shalom, he makes sure somebody else comes along and reminds us we're Jewish. If you don't remember by yourself. There's a story told when the Baal Shem Tov came to Constantinople before Pesach, on the way he was trying to go to Israel because he wanted to meet the Ara Chaim. He believed that if he could meet the Ara Chaim, then the two of them together would be able to bring about a change and Mashiach would finally come. But from heaven it wasn't to be. Anyway, there's a dangerous trip that was fraught. Everything that could go wrong went wrong. And the Baal Shem Tov, they got off a wagon or a ship in Constantinople and they heard the locals say, oh, look at these filthy Jews. Let's stay away from them and not touch them. And the Baal Shem Tov laughed like to himself and he told his son-in-law, he says, you see, Hashem is protecting us. They're staying away from us.
So is the Metzora ultimately contrite for his sins and he does tshuva? What ultimately would happen to
Let's finish this and then you'll see if you have an answer to your question. Whether the Metzora is actually contrite. Let's just finish this. So at the same time that the Torah says that the Metzora has to get brought to the Kohen, it also, the next pasuk says, V'yotza ha-Kohen el mechutz l'machana. The Kohen's job is to go outside the camp. The Kohen's got to find the Metzora. Amna mashlava rishin shel tshuva, olu li yeis bederach shel v'huva el ha-Kohen. The first step may be that something triggers the Kohen. Something compels him. Something moves him. Something moved the Metzora. Havas ha-Kohen li de tshuva bar-Karchei. Sometimes being forced to tshuva. Sometimes being pushed in a direction. But Hashem does not want to force him into tshuva. Hashem wants that the tshuva, the return, the restoration, the rehabilitation should not be something that's coerced. We don't believe in Khomeiniism. We don't believe in forcing people to follow Torah mitzvahs. We believe in inspiring people to follow Torah mitzvahs. So maybe sometimes this person is on a path that needs to be interrupted. So Hashem will interrupt their path. And Hashem will throw something into the spokes of the wheels and do something to make him wake up and realize that this is just not right. But once that happens, once that wake-up moment happens, once they get that epiphany, it's the Metzora himself that has to, so to speak, pick up the ball and carry it forward. And it has to be, instead of it just being something superficial, where the Metzora was moved or forced or compelled by a force greater than he or she, but instead, tachter al techei nafshei, it should somehow permeate the core of their soul, the tashpi al pnimiyusei, it should make them change. And what does it mean when a person changes? Then the person is contrite. I'm not being compelled to do this, I want to do this. It becomes your ratzon, your desire, you want this. V'zehu, and this is the meaning of v'yotza ha-kohen al mechutz l'machne. This is the meaning of the Kohen will go outside of the camp, the orbit of scrimmage of holiness, to greet the Metzora. Meaning, acharei hisoridus ha-tshuva harishayna, after that initial awakening. This awakening did not come from the Metzora because of his own free will or goodwill. This Metzora came because he was pushed or compelled. V'huvel ha-kohen, something pushed him, something moved him. There was some kind of force or power that got him to leave his high horse, get off his high horse. So then, after he comes to the Kohen, Yotza HaKohen al-Mechutz al-Machna, and the Kohen's job is to go outside the camp, El Mekoyim Yishlal Metzayda Atzmei, to wherever the Metzayda is, V'sham Hu Mashpia Alav. And then the Kohen has to do what? Not force. We don't believe in forcing anybody. The Kohen has to gently, use gentle persuasion, give what they call a little nudge. Umevi Alav Tahara. And then the Kohen can bring him into a state of purity. So as to your question, is the Metzora contrite? In the end, the Metzora has to be contrite. And sometimes a person is so set in their ways, they refuse to acknowledge that it isn't okay. And Hashem will make something happen. There will be a force greater than us that will stop us in our tracks, that will position us towards Machane HaKedusha, the camp of holiness. But then it's the job of the Kohen to come out and stimulate within the Metzora the desire to return.
Ultimately, all
Mitzoras
will come
home. Ultimately, all Mitzoraim will come home. But the Mitzora's journey will start from a higher place, but at some point it has to become the Mitzora's journey themselves. And here is the critical key. As much as Hashem promises, I won't let him go, and I'll bring him home, and as much as it's the Mitzora's responsibility to come home, it's also our responsibility, acting as the Kohen, to help the Mitzora realize the folly of his ways and to bring him home. But as I said, Khomeiniism is not Judaism. We don't believe in coercing or forcing anybody. But we do believe in reaching out to our fellow Jews, and we do believe in inspiring them to come home to the path of righteousness and Torah mitzvah, and that is our responsibility. And when you do your job right, and you act as a Kohen should, so then, hopefully, the Mitzora gets it, and the Mitzora returns, because ultimately, nobody can coerce anybody to do anything. It has to become your free will, your desire, but that doesn't leave us uninvolved. It doesn't absolve us of our responsibility to stimulate that desire and to make the Kohen want to come home through gentle persuasion, through love, through acceptance, in a kosher way, and ultimately by helping guide somebody along the path of tshuva, of rehabilitation. And that's got lots and lots of food for thought and much inspiration for us.